Pablo Picasso said computers are useless. They can only give you answers. But Picasso didn't go far enough. The answers the computers give must themselves be questioned. This is especially true of AI. Questioning AI is the topic today on Mind Matters.
Welcome to Mind Matters News, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marx.
Greetings. Groucho Marx famously quipped, "I once shot an elephant in my pajamas." He then went on to say how he got in my pajamas, I'll never know. The statement, "I once shot an elephant in my pajamas," is ambiguous. It's a pun which needs explanation or some sort of context. Without clarifying context, the computer will be confused by phrases with double meaning. The simple pun is an example. The need for clarification includes queries to IBM Watson. Now, IBM Watson, if you remember, won against the world's best Jeopardy players a couple of decades ago. But Watson has recently been called a joke. What's going on? To what degree did Watson's inability to understand contribute to its decline? To talk with me today on Mind Matters is Gary N. Smith, and we're delighted to have him because he's really an accomplished and very credentialed intellectual. Gary is the Fletcher Jones Professor of Economics at Pomona College. He received his PhD in economics from Yale University, and after receiving his PhD, he served as an assistant professor there for 7 years. He has written a number of books, and the titles themselves are very intriguing. One is Standard Deviations, Flawed Assumptions, Tortured Data, and Other Ways to Lie with Statistics. He also wrote another book, Money Machine. I have to get this. Gary, I've not read this book, but this I need some background in. The Surprisingly Simple Power of Value Investing. His research has been featured on a number of top venues like Bloomberg Radio Network, CNBC, The Brian Lehrer Show, Forbes, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, Motley Fool, Newsweek, and Business Week. Gary, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Okay, your most recent book, I got to say, I listened to it. I didn't read it. I listened to it, and then I bought a hard copy so I could get quotes and stuff out of it. But it's a book entitled The AI Delusion. It's published by Oxford University Press, and it's a wonderfully written book, and I would recommend it to anybody that wants to find out more about some of the things that you don't hear on the headlines about artificial intelligence. Dr. Smith is a practitioner that knows data. He spent his career in data. He knows how data can fool you and how it can inform you. And he says humans must always be in the loop in interpretation and of conclusions from computers. Gary, what motivated you to write the book, The AI Delusion?
Well, I'm an economist, and I've long been fascinated with data and the stock market and statistics. And One of the amazing things, one of the things that's always amazed me is how easy it is to find a coincidental correlation and to think it's meaningful. And so investors do this all the time. They find some pattern. They think it's a way to beat the stock market. And then it turns out to be fool's gold. One of the most famous ones you probably know is the Super Bowl stock market indicator. That if a team in the NFC wins the Super Bowl or a team in the AFC that used to be in the NFL wins the Super Bowl, that's supposed to be good for the stock market. And then if a team in the AFL wins, the AFC wins the Super Bowl, that's bad for the stock market. And it's utter nonsense. And the ironic thing about it is the guy who created it, Leonard Coppett, he intended it to be a joke. He wanted to show people that correlation is not causation. And he was absolutely flabbergasted when people start taking it seriously. And people still do. And I have friends on Wall Street who are rooting for the Rams because they think that's going to be good for the stock market. And it's just nuts, but it's part of human nature to see patterns and think they're meaningful. And what we have with computers nowadays, and AI in particular, is just that kind of data mining, coincidental correlations on steroids, because computers are so good at finding patterns and correlations, but absolutely useless at deciding whether they make sense or not, or there's some kind of cosmic joke.
I dealt with a financial guy. Now, there's two types of people that do trading. There's the ones, I think, do they call them quants that do the regression lines and they look for statistics.
Yep. The algo traders and the quants are going all by data. Yeah,
exactly. And then there's the people who do analysis. And I even know in my field, like Claude Shannon, who was a great nerd in terms of mathematician, says, no, none of this quant stuff works. He actually went through kind of a Warren Buffett quality sort of assessment. I had this friend tell me that nobody uses quants anymore, especially in academia. I mean, they're used, but people in academia don't take them seriously at all.
Well, that's true. But on Wall Street, they do. It's been estimated that a third of all trades now are algo trades made by computers with no human supervision.
Well, let me tell you something that he said and get your reaction to it. He said he used to trade futures. I forget what type of futures it was, but he traded futures, and he said he used quants. Trend lines and stochastics. And he said that, it kind of worked. And I said, well, wait a minute, you just said that quants didn't work. And his response was, yeah, but everybody else uses quants that trades these futures. And because of that, if I can get just a little bit heads up on that, I can beat them to the markets. So it was kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy is what he said.
It's also true on these computers that a lot of the successful computer trading is just simply front running, where they learn of an order that comes in and they buy before the order is executed, then they sell to the order and they make a penny or a tenth of a penny or a hundredth of a penny a share. And they get it just for excessively cheating, just for ripping somebody off.
And I guess that's legal, right?
It's right now it is.
Oh, geez. Okay. Getting back to the topic, trusting AI without examination is dangerous. You start out your book with, I think, just an interesting background in Barack Obama's use of data analytics in his campaign and how successful it was. And then Hillary Clinton came along and used the data analytics, and it didn't work too well. What happened then? What's the deal?
Well, Barack Obama was this little-known senator with an unhelpful name. And he had the guts to run against Hillary Clinton back in 2008. And he had charm and charisma, and he was fresh, a fresh face. But he also had all these computer nerds working for him. And they did this micro-targeting where they went out and they tried to, for every single potential voter in the country, they tried to figure out what kind of issues appealed to that voter. And if the person was likely to vote for Obama, how to get that person to the polls and get him to vote. And it worked, and he was able to raise unheard of amounts of money, and he was able to defeat Hillary Clinton and then John McCain. And so that sort of sealed the deal on micro-targeting using computers being a effective political tool. And so when Hillary ran again in 2016, she tried to do the same thing. And she even hired some of Obama's people to work for her, and they created this huge software program they called Ada, after some long ago mathematician. And they went out and micro-targeted, and they did the same thing he did, except some of the stuff that made a difference they couldn't put in the computer, like the enthusiasm factor. And so when Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump gave speeches, tens of thousands of people showed up and yelled and screamed. They were excited. And when Hillary Clinton gave a speech, a couple hundred people would show up and sit politely. And you couldn't put that in a computer. And so Ada, the computer algorithm, had no idea that she was in trouble because her data showed that, the Democrats always win Wisconsin and Michigan and Minnesota. And so you don't need to campaign there. You don't need advertisements. And meanwhile, the people on the ground were saying, people here are not excited about you. You got to spend some money. You got to spend some resources and stop wasting money in Arizona and go back to the states that really count for winning this election. And in terms of message, too, the computer was telling her the most effective message is, hey, I'm not perfect, but at least Donald Trump's worse. And her husband, Bill Clinton, one of the greatest campaigners we've ever seen, he beat Bush famously with a slogan, it's the economy, stupid.
Yes.
And he kept saying what people care about is jobs. And they're worried about losing their jobs. They've already lost their jobs. And that's why Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are getting votes. And the computer couldn't handle that because the computer didn't, you couldn't enter stuff like that into a computer. You couldn't put in enthusiasm and fears, and worries and things like that. And of course you lost. And afterwards, you know, some experienced people, Democrats, said it was like political malpractice the way she used her computer.
My goodness. So that is an example of somebody looking at the data from a computer and not giving it the context that they needed, just like a pun.
Some people say, you know, if you can't measure it, it doesn't count. And sometimes the things that count can't be measured.
That's true. Yeah. That's actually one of the things that I'm involved in was the inability of computers to do things like become enthusiastic, become creative. And because of that lack of ability, many times it doesn't come out unless it's actually programmed in. Actually, I was in neural networks back in the 90s and when Bill Clinton was running, and they hired this guy to do neural networks. And what they wanted to do is use neural networks to figure out what the swing group would be in the election.
Right.
And this guy trained the neural network and he found out it was married families that went bowling. That was the swing vote. That was in a column by Robert Novak. I don't know if you remember Robert Novak, it's just kind of crazy. Well, let's talk about IBM Watson.
Sure.
That beat the world champion at Jeopardy. I learned from your book, this was the first time that the contest, it was kind of gamed in a way, in the sense that the programmers of Watson had certain types of questions that they did not want Watson to be asked. And it was gamed. Tell us about that. That is just fascinating.
Yeah, there's two kinds of gaming going on. One was that for the human contestants, they weren't allowed to buzz in until a light went on. And it took them a fraction of a second to see the light and respond. And Watson was sent, it couldn't see lights, so it was sent an electronic signal when it was okay to buzz in. And that signal got there faster and was processed faster. And so Watson was able to buzz in repeatedly faster than the humans were. And it wasn't that the humans didn't know the answer, just they didn't have the reflexes. The other gaming was that computers don't really understand words. So you say a word like Abraham Lincoln, say 16th president of the United States, and the computer doesn't know what 16th and president of the United States means, but it can go rummage through its Wikipedia-like sources and find those words and match them to a president, Abraham Lincoln, and come back with who was Abraham Lincoln. But then you put anything in that's like a pun or a joke or a riddle or sarcasm that you can't look up in Wikipedia, and the computers are helpless. For example, in the first round, one of the final Jeopardy clues was, its largest airport is named for a World War II hero. Its second largest for a World War II battle. And so the correct answer was Chicago. And Watson guessed Toronto. And apparently because it was confused in the second part of that sentence, what it referred to. And that is a common problem with computers. There's even a thing called the Winograd Schema Challenge. Winograd. He's a computer scientist at Stanford. And he thought up this test of computer knowledge. And so the question is, what does it refer to in this sentence? I can't chop down that tree with this axe because it is too small. Does it refer to the tree or the axe? And humans, we immediately know what it is, right? Because we know what a tree is. We know what an axe is. We know what chop down means. We know that small axes are not going to bring down big trees. But computers can't answer that question because they don't know what it refers to. And there's a semi-annual Winograd Schema Challenge where computers try and get 90% of the questions right. And right now they get about 50% right. They do no better than guessing because they truly don't understand what words mean. And so in the Jeopardy thing, the IBM people did not want any kind of questions where there was ambiguity about what was being asked. Because ambiguity is very hard for computers to deal with.
I have a lower class example from the Flintstones. Fred got his fingers glued in a bowling ball, and Barney got a big hammer. And Fred said, "When I nod my head, hit it." So
I know.
So there we have also a vague pronoun that. By the way, Barney did whack Fred in the head. So if that's a spoiler alert for everybody. So one of the things you mentioned, I think everybody is familiar with the IBM Watson commercial,
right,
with Bob Dylan, yeah, a great songwriting icon, Nobel Prize winner, who came out and Bob Dylan came out and Watson said, I read 50 billion pages a second or whatever it is. And then he says, I've read all your work and I think that your primary objective is to promote the idea that time passes and love fades. And that was Watson's summary of Dylan's work. You pointed out that was actually pretty shallow.
It was really bad. A friend of mine who's a pioneer in artificial research, Roger Shank, he wrote a blog about this, and he said, the ad made me laugh, or would have if it had not made me so angry. I will say it clearly, Watson is a fraud. And you and I, people who know Bob Dylan, what he was writing about was the Vietnam War and civil rights. But he didn't use those words. And so Watson couldn't figure out what he was actually writing about. And so one of the examples I use, it's Roger Shank, is the opening lines to The Times They Are Changing. Come gather round people wherever you roam. Admit that the waters around you have grown and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. And what does that mean? And you and I, we could argue about it, disagree about it, like any great poem or literature, but we have a basic idea about what he's saying, that there's trouble brewing and things, the times are changing. And Watson has no idea. It doesn't know what any of those individual words mean. Or you put them together, it has no idea what those words mean. And so it comes up with silly things like he's writing about time passes and love fades, but not at all what he was writing about.
So basically, IBM Watson doesn't understand. It doesn't have the ability to understand anything which is metaphorical, which has double meaning, which is meant in whimsy. And it kind of takes everything literally then, right?
Yes, but even deeper than that, it truly does not understand what words mean. And so, like, its inability to understand what it refers to in a sentence is because it does not actually know what any of the words in the sentence means. It can count them. It can look up definitions. It can find rhyming. Well, it can't find rhyming words. It can spell check them, but it doesn't actually know what it means. It's like there's this guy, Nigel Richards, who has won the French Scrabble Championship twice. And he doesn't understand any of the words that he uses, that he spells, but it's just a big mathematical puzzle. And that's what computers do with words. They spell check them, they check up, look up definitions and stuff like that, but they literally do not know what they mean. And you'll see that in some translation programs, like even the best deep neural network ones, the Google Translate ones, sometimes the stuff that comes back is just absolute gibberish because they really didn't, the way they translate sentences is word by word. Well, first sentence by sentence, and then word by word within a sentence without having any concept of what the person is trying to say. And so they'll come back with translations which kind of match up sentence for sentence and word for word, but lose all meaning because they don't know meaning.
Exactly. Well, we've run out of time for this episode. I'd like you to join us for a follow-up episode. So thank you for your time. So we've been talking to Gary Smith, and Gary is the author of the book AI Delusion. And please pick it up, and we'll talk more to Gary next on Mind Matters.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.